America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting rendition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Nethlin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Okay, yeah. So, this episode is going to be for May 8th, 2020. And, it's been one of those weeks. Which in the age of coronavirus is like, in normal times it would suck, but in coronavirus times it's actually like normal. Which I don't know if that's a, I don't think that's a good thing.
No, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
We like, we really should not. Yeah. But, so like here in Georgia, everybody knows, our state has started reopening. I went to the used bookstore this week, and got some stuff. Most people are doing good. They're doing, you know, they're doing the social distancing stuff. Most people are out wearing masks. A lot of folks are wearing gloves, you know. Most people are doing, you know, they're being smart about it. Because I guess, you know, thanks a lot, Governor fucking Kemp. But, by the way, he's going to get, we got a story about him that he's going to get involved in just a little late, just in a little bit. Because unfortunately, something else happened in my state that has become public knowledge. Yeah. We'll be talking about that. But, yeah, nothing much, really. I think we're at the sort of, more or less, the kind of downturn for COVID-19 in the United States at the moment. There are little spikes that have happened here and there, but it seems more like it's sort of, we've kind of plateaued, finally. But, you know, we're probably still going to be doing a lot of this, you know, a lot of this, social distancing and PPE shit for probably well into September.
Yeah.
When it then decides to come back around again.
Yeah, we'll be at square one all over again.
Probably around November sometime. And that's just me being optimistic. For all I know, it could show up in early October. But, yeah. I mean, it could be worse. At least we won't have to deal for this shit during the whole summer. Oh, wait! We just might.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're supposed to go on our first camping trip in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, depends on where you're going camping.
I think Indiana.
If you're out in the wilderness, you don't really have a whole lot to worry about.
No. I don't think you understand what I mean by camping.
Glamping.
There must be showers. Well, yeah, showers, flush toilets, power. Running water.
That's not camping. That's
basically going to a hotel for a week.
A hotel full of mosquitoes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So, with that, let's start off as we usually start off with. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been doing a lot of the same stuff, Streets of Rage 4 and my Wheel of Time reread. I'm in the 12th book now, so motoring through that. Did some shopping, actually went out with my mom, and so that was kind of fun. I'm going to give one random dude some credit for creativity, because rather than a mask, he was using a full face hockey helmet with with a cloth covering over it.
Okay.
Well, okay. I guess that works. It's probably more comfortable than a mask. So, yeah, that's interesting. And I wish I had taken a photo of it because it was amazing. But yeah, so that's kind of it for me.
All right, Pat.
Not much on the non-gaming front this week, but I did have a bit of an interesting situation play out because, I've kind of had to chain up the fence gate that goes to my back porch because people were off trying to fish off of it and turn it into a hangout, and I'm not having any of that.
Oh, hell no.
So the other day I looked out my back window and saw there were people out there, but it was the landlord taking a look and seeing just how much of the porch had been eroded away by the river over time. And we had a good conversation. To make a long story short, your boy's getting a deck expansion this summer.
Sweet! You know, so, Scott was awesome. Just asking, like, do you think Pat would grow vegetables outside of his apartment? I'm like, I don't think so, dude.
Well, it's cement. I mean, there's soil, yeah. But it's going to be covered up with cement.
No. Yeah. Flower pots, dude. Flower pots. Nobody wants to be bending down and doing that shit.
Yeah, we have too much wildlife in the neighborhood for that.
They'd eat it all.
And by that, I mean, occasionally I'll leave my apartment in the winter for the morning to find puma tracks going down the driveway. So,
yep.
Yeah. If I put vegetables out there, it would just be fodder for the local fauna.
Yeah.
But other than that, I've also been continuing my stock market education, and my portfolio kind of reads like a short snapshot of American life at this point, because I've got let me take a look here. Streaming, oil, cannabis, oil, oil. Retail, cannabis, and oil. So, yeah, I have America in my stock portfolio. But I'm also accumulating a fair amount of holdings. My portfolio at the moment is worth about $134. And the fucking weird part of all this is so I've been sharing people on this app and using my referral so that we all get free stocks and everything. Yesterday I got 3 free stocks.
Nice. Which ones?
All 3 of them were GameStop.
All three
of them were GameStop. And it has been one of my top performers today.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Like, I got the stocks, they were around $4.75 when I got them. And this stock poked its head up over the $5 mark a few times today. So it's sitting at $4.97 right now. And even if I had spent money on it, I would have turned a profit. So what the fuck?
Oh my God.
I don't know whether to hang on to it and see what happens, or just get out now and put more of it into some of these cheap oil and pot stocks. Because it's nice that it's doing well. It's also GameStop.
Yeah.
You have no idea how conflicted I am right now. So, yeah. Other than that, I picked up some stuff on the PlayStation store sales that I'll be talking about on Sunday, but that's pretty much been it for me.
Mm-hmm. No, you won't. Because you're not doing a show on Sunday.
Oh yeah, that's right. Next Sunday.
Yeah.
All right, Teresa. What about you?
I've been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons. Not quite as much as I had been, but you know, still keeping up and doing my shit. Finally figured out like how to get rid of that one villager that moved in from Joe's town that I did not want, and I had been courting that unicorn. Well, I had the unicorn come back and finally convinced him to move in, and he kicked the other guy out. So I'm like, yes, bye-bye baboon. So that was good news for me, but I have been playing a shit ton of Civilization VI because new computer.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Excuse me. So I could play it without my laptop sounding like, you know, a jet that's about to take off from O'Hare. because I've been streaming it. I like playing Civ 6 with a touchscreen. I'm usually using the keyboard and the trackpad, but I like using streaming it from the big computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Steam streaming. No, who would watch a stream of Civ 6? That's the most boring shit. Let me take a look. Yeah, there's probably like 12 people doing it right now. But I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 again, and I want to do some dungeons, but I don't want to be a total scrub, and I've forgotten like all of my moves. And again, new computer, so it didn't save my my crossbars, all my settings and shit like that. So I'm trying to figure out what the hell. And I actually had to draw out a chart. It's that bad. I had to draw it. So
35 channels are streaming Civ 6 right now with 672 viewers among them.
Oh, my God. Wow, people got a lot of time.
And that's just Civ 6 itself. Apparently, the expansions have separate entries.
Really? Because I wonder how much Rise and Fall is doing. Good grief.
Look.
But then I've also been playing Commander Keen. And nice. Yeah, right? It's nice.
Old school.
Yeah. Yep. And it is just simply a stretched port from DOS, the one on Steam.
Yep.
Or at least the original, the first episode. And you can't really tell that it's stretched to fit a 16:9, except in some of the menus, which you don't go in anyway, because I mean, it's Commander Keen. And my kid is watching me playing that while he's doing his remote schooling stuff. And he's like, is this a hard game? And I'm like, no, not really. And I was playing again, and I'm like, this is cool, and lots of nostalgia. And I remember, and I'm still the same person who used to play it when I was 16, but I could also be playing Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. So I guess nostalgia has its place, but modern games sure are pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, I've been watching more of The Crown. Definitely enjoying that. I rewatched Ready Player One. Scott and Jacob had not watched it yet. I think they definitely enjoyed that. And you know, I gotta say, it wasn't the same experience as seeing it at the movies, because I went and saw that by myself while they were at work and school. and we've got a pretty decent sized TV, but man, it just, that one, I think, really needs a huge screen, or needs people sitting closer to the TV. Mm. And then in between all that crap, I've been painting kitchen cabinets, which is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to do. But it's going to be worth it. And I'll let you know when I'm done in about 6 weeks. And I have very small cabinets. But, you know, I didn't want to spend $7,000 on a new kitchen. So fuck it. I'm painting them. All right.
Chris, what about you?
This has just been a very busy week at work, working for the next few weeks. The most hours I've ever worked there, which is very tiring. Kind of exhausted right now because I had to work late last night and then come in early, like 12 hours later, which is always fun. So yeah, basically I don't have that much time for anything really. I watched the second episode of Middle Ditch and Schwartz, which is a sort of improv, show that they're doing. These are just three different, things they did, little stage shows, about an hour long each, really well done. And the second one's just great. Kind of similar to the first one, and that they talk to, like, present a question to the audience and pick an interesting answer and kind of have them expand on it, learn more information, and kind of do their, like, improv scene based on some of the information they get, that kind of thing. The second one was pretty good. I look forward to the last one. And yeah, it's fun for people that are into improv. Watch more DuckTales, which also features Ben Schwartz, and already kind of don't really hear Dewey anymore. I hear Sonic the Hedgehog because it's the same person, Ben Schwartz. He doesn't have the greatest range of voices, so
nope.
It's very much the same character, as well as Dewey being kind of the most energetic of the three. It doesn't help at all, but other than that, there's just a lot of good stuff with that. And also for the release of the Return of Skywalker on Disney Plus, I ended up watching that. See if it got better on a second watch, and it didn't. Kind of just made it more obvious that their whole kind of goal with that was to kind of retcon stuff from The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Kind of a appeal to the vocal minority that hated that movie versus the vast majority that liked it, at least. Notice the Star Destroyers with the dick lasers show up at the, like, 5 minutes in, the first one you see. Yeah. I was like, oh, that was a lot faster than I thought it was. Until you see their grand reveal later on in the movie. It's just a lot of weird shit in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like one real cheesy line that, what is it? I think Poe is like, oh, they win if they make you think you're alone. As far as the Sith winning over the Rebels. Because they're at a point where they're, I think there's, they reference the end of the Last Jedi where they sent out a distress signal for help and got no responses or stuff like that. So like losing some hope and kind of come up with that like cheesy line about, you know, not giving up hope, that kind of thing. A lot of weird stuff like that. It's okay as a movie. Not great as the end of a trilogy where it just kind of makes the whole trilogy just seem very haphazard, the way it all came together, which it kind of did.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like there was a coherent plan for what they were going to do over the course of it. Instead, you kind of had weird, like, infighting popping up in the movies itself, which is kind of weird. But, let's see. Stream some Rocket League on Sunday. Played the new drop shot rumble mode that was up for that weekend, which is just ridiculous. It basically has the great stuff about drop shot, which is this very kind of strategic aerial based maneuvers, but then you throw in the random power ups of rumble, and it becomes a mode that anybody can play, and that means it's much more enjoyable for people that are not great at aerial stuff in that game. It also means there's just a lot of crazy stuff that happens constantly as people get their power-ups and decide to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Which led to some fun moments where I was just having lots of bad luck. By the end, I was just basically on like, you know, that ball was going to go into the hole. Why don't you just knock it in for me to the other team? And they managed to get some nice uses of power-ups that just scored for me. Give me credit for the goal. I was like, all right, thank you. I gave him thanks in a very sarcastic manner.
Just
very much kind of like that. Great. Now you finally helped me out. Give me a bone here. That kind of thing. Which is kind of a fun way to end a stream like that. And let's see. I streamed on Tuesday. I played some Farming Sim 19. Since that is on PlayStation Plus right now, and had a bit of fun with it. Played from basically from the beginning, doing the tutorial and all that, kind of just getting the grasp of what the game is. And it's It's a fun kind of a game. It definitely doesn't do a great job of getting people on board with its different modes. There's three different modes it offers up front. One is basically like, we'll give you some plots of land and some equipment, and you got to go and do your harvesting and all that yourself. But that mode has a tutorial in it, so if you want to, you know, learn how to play it, it's sort of the best way to do it. There's one that gives you, I think, a ton of money but no land or equipment, so you kind of have to work your way around with that. And then the third one gives you no money, no equipment, and it's basically like the realistic hard mode for it. So I ended up doing the one that was a bit easier, which is pretty good. There's a lot of different options for making it easier on a variety of things. But yeah, it's pretty good for what it is. Ended up driving around a good bit as you set up your farm, the crops you're going to grow, and all that kind of stuff. And I took a couple of jobs to get some money helping out other people's farms. So I had something that was like, oh, I need you to fertilize my plot of land, that kind of thing. Which took me a bit because I had to figure out what equipment I needed for that, what kind of fertilizer I needed for that. And I ended up buying too much because I did not realize how much was needed to use, which wasn't a huge surprise. The little thing I had to pull behind my tractor for that, I think, could hold like 3,000 whatever of fertilizer, and it was coming like 1,000 variants. So I got the first third, and I was like, I might as well get more because I'm not sure how much this field's going to take. I think it was up to like 93%, I think, full when I had three of them. So I went to go do it. I think by the end of that, I was at 92%. So it's like, oh, I way overdid it. Also, I don't have to worry about fertilizer for a while, so it'll work out. But, yeah, it's not bad. It's pretty good for kind of if you need a game that's kind of very chill right now, which is some probably a lot of people might want.
Yeah.
And all right. Along with that, also been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons. I got one new villager. I have no memory of what their name is.
Yeah.
It's just like he's like a movie industry kind of guy. Like a squirrel dude, I think. I forget what his name is. But I got to a point of talking with him where it was just like, you could only invite him to the island. You couldn't like say yes or no to it. I was like, this is weird. I couldn't just say, let me think on this kind of thing. But I don't know. It was weird the way it was. But I got him a house, and we'll see how it goes. Yeah, that's pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, as for me, I have been playing Valkyria Chronicles with, you know, the remaster on my on the PS4. And, yeah, I totally forgot that there's a whole part of that game where you're in a fucking concentration camp. Yeah. So, as I pointed out in the past, Valkyria Chronicles is basically the closest thing you're ever going to get to Japanese developers making an actual World War II game that's, like, actually involved and not just, you know, a top-down shooter. But in order to pull it off, they basically have to create an entire, like, alternate world where, you know, there's, like, fantasy analogs to everything. You know, there's the Imperial Alliance, which is basically the Axis combined with bits of Russia for some reason. You've got Gallia, which is basically like a sort of like Netherlandish, like somewhere around Sweden or Switzerland, which tries to remain neutral until it gets invaded. And then, of course, you've got the Federation. Federation, which is basically the Allies. And you have the Darsons. And the Darsons are basically this game's analog to the Jews, basically. Or Romani, or Slavs, or basically any kind of, you know, ethnic minority that the Nazis wanted to wipe out, sort of all rolled up into one group. And one of the things you have to do is you got to make contact with a informant that is in one of these Darson concentration camps. And you actually go in one and you see the conditions that everybody's living under. The only thing they're apparently not actively doing is like actively, you know, killing them and putting them in ovens, because I think even for them that would be a little too on the nose. But it's very clear what's supposed to be happening here. And it's just really fucking off-putting, because one of the like key members in your squad 7, and actually this is a trait that some of the like other like lesser members you can switch out have. She is basically a Darson hater, and because she's confronted with this, she goes into like this weird, like you want to think like, you know, her eyes are being open and she's realizing that, you know, all of this prejudice is wrong, but she's got this weird like tsundere thing going too. So it's kind of awkward. And I don't remember it being that fucking awkward when I played this the first time. Yeah. Anybody who has played Valkyria Chronicles, you know what I'm talking about. It's Rosie, the redhead. Yeah, her. Goddamn, man. It's just... other than that, the game's still a whole hell of a lot of fun. And I forgot, though, that there are parts of this game where you kind of have to go into the skirmishes and do a little grinding, because otherwise, you know, it costs a lot of money to upgrade your gear and shit in that game. And, you know, got to get all that cash and experience somehow.
Gotta get paid.
Yeah. Books. I went to the used bookstore this week, and I got a couple things. I got another Elmore Leonard called Freaky Deaky, which is about a bunch of old, like, hippie terrorists deciding that they want to make their mark again in the 90s. Shit like that. I also picked up a copy of Stephen King's, 11-22-63. You guys know what that is, right? November 22nd, 1963, the day John F. Kennedy was shot. Yeah. And basically the premise is that this dude who's like a professor at a community college, one of his colleagues is obsessed with trying to go back in time and avert the Kennedy assassination, and then he finds like a portal in his basement that actually takes him back to a couple days before the assassination happens. And so he actually manages to prevent the assassination of John F. Kennedy by, I can't remember quite how he does it, because I haven't got to that part yet, but I do know what ends up happening. spoiler alert, basically it ends up causing World War III. Yeah, see, people forget about Kennedy is that he was a serious hawk. And he kind of escalates the conflict with the Soviet Union until it goes full-on nuclear.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Remember, the Cuban Missile Crisis happened under his administration.
Yes.
And you remember, the U.S. are kind of the reason that whole thing started in the first place, because we decided to put a bunch of missiles in Turkey and aim them at the Russians. And so they were like, yeah, well, we're going to do this. How does it feel? And plus, Fidel was all like, yeah, we'll volunteer for that shit.
Sign us up.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, what else? Movies and anime. I finished Noir on Funimation. I highly recommend it. Great series. There's a lot of like shoujo eye subtext that kind of comes to a head in the last two episodes, and it's not fucking subtle, like, at all. And I also watched, any of you guys ever watched a movie called Assault on Precinct 13? And I don't mean like the remake that came out in 2005. I mean the original.
No, I've just heard of it.
It's one of John Carpenter's earliest films. In fact, it's actually the first film he made that actually got any attention. He made the damn thing on like a third of the budget of what Halloween was. And it's pretty fucking awesome. Basically, the LAPD basically slaughters an entire gang. The gang that's sort of like considered their blood brothers decide they're going to take out their revenge on the city of Los Angeles. And so they basically gather up and basically storm. Basically, they get into the 13th precinct and basically put it under siege.
Okay, then.
It actually gets so bad that the cops and the convicts in the county jail actually have to team up to fight it off. And because it's a Carpenter movie, it also has, you know, that one like thing that's sort of like his signature, which is the synthesizer for the soundtrack. But this is like the first movie he actually used his the synthesizer for his soundtrack. And even though it was a movie that was like put out in 1976, it sounds like it came out in 1982. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Much like Pat and Teresa, I'm doing stonks. Yeah.
How's it treating you?
My portfolio at the moment is worth about, let me check, it's particularly high at the moment because I've only bought a few things.
Well, you started about a week later than I did, too, so that...
Yeah, my portfolio at the moment is currently worth about $31.95. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, for starting out, it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, so getting used to that, and it's like, you know what? You know, this is a way that, you know, if there's a rainy day and I need some quick cash, you know, I got something to fall back on if I need it, even if it's just a little bit.
Yep.
But yeah. And other than that, nothing really. I had to go outside yesterday and do the fucking weed eating, which I don't know if there's anybody. I'm sure there's at least one or two here among us, but definitely out there who are listening. Weed eating is probably one of the most tedious fucking things on the planet.
So is the entire concept of the lawn.
Yeah, it is. But the thing you have to understand is, you know, living out in the sticks like I do, what counts for lawn is pretty expansive compared to like what a usual suburb would be. But fortunately, I have one of those 80 volt battery weed eaters, string cutters. They're very light, and you don't have to worry about a fucking petrol engine. So it's not like, it doesn't feel like it weighs a ton when you're carrying this fucking thing around. It still vibrates like crazy, though, and I don't think my hands wouldn't stop shaking until well into this morning.
But just think of all those venomous snakes that aren't going to be lurking around because the lawn is the lawn is properly scalped and there's no weeds.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys do scalp your lawn, right? You cut it so damn short. It's not like the suburbs. It really isn't.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, when you live out in the country, you got to deal with wildlife and shit, too. Yeah. So, and it's not just like raccoons, either. It's snakes, it's coyotes, it's fucking wildcats and shit. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. Where my mom and my brother live, we never, ever fucking had raccoons. Ever. Mm. I wonder why.
Oh, well, the reason we don't have them here is because pretty much everyone in the fucking neighborhood has a dog.
Or a rifle. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Both are valid explanations. Okay.
Yeah.
No, no squirrels either. They all got killed in squirrel season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have a shit ton of squirrels, though. And you know what else we got a shit ton of? Deer.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, you know, you're out there, and there's all these all these city folk who are out there listening. They're like, oh, you can see deer? You know, and you're thinking it's a case to, like, you know, you're driving down the road because you're going to the country for the autumn, and you see a deer on the side of the road, and you stop, and you're like, hey, kids, look, it's a deer.
Yeah.
Be quiet.
The problem is it's on its side, bloated, and missing two limbs.
Exactly. Yeah. You can smell it before you get up to it.
Yeah. But the other thing you have to remember is if you live out in the country, you realize what deer actually are, which are overgrown rats with hooves.
Yes.
Well, they're out of control because there aren't enough puma, wildcats, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we have deer season. We have deer season down here for a reason, folks. Because if we don't keep the population in control, they will fucking overrun the place. But anyway, all right. So with that out of the way, we got anything we want to add before we move on?
No. I think I'm good.
Just all right. Well. Machine.
Yeah. Well, then, I do believe now it is time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, one of the things about living in the Trump era is the fact that all of these, like, assholes you thought dead and gone sort of climb out of the woodwork and suddenly make themselves relevant again in just the worst fucking way possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, you got guys like Ted Nugent, who was, like, good for a time in the 70s, and then he hasn't released a decent piece of shit since 1980. Like, the closest good thing he did was he got into damn Yankees, and that was mostly... that was mostly Tommy Shaw's outfit, but... and then, you know, got...
There.
Yeah. Because he didn't sing anything.
Yeah.
It was all good. Well, no, wait, wrong. No, he did actually sing one song on the album, but that's neither here nor there. You know, you got a bunch of fuckers from like the 80s and early 90s just crawling out of the woodwork. Because, let's be honest, Donald Trump is representative of all the things that were wrong with the 80s, all in one person.
Yeah.
And among those people that represented everything that was wrong with the 80s include, of course, televangelists. And back in the 80s, there were few televangelists that were higher up in the world than our old buddy Jim Baker.
Oh,
who you all know has sort of made himself relevant again. By, you know, tacking his wagon onto the doom preparation conspiracy Trump train. You know, and especially selling his stupid silver nitrate cures for COVID-19, even though he's gotten a few cease and desist orders from FCC, and pretty sure he's gotten one from the DEA as well.
Yeah, that was more recently.
Yeah, but what people don't think, and it's funny seeing him and seeing like a whole new generation being introduced to this douchebag, because when we were all kids, we also knew about about Jim Baker, but
oh yeah,
he was a lot younger, but he was also had much better PR back then too.
Well, he hadn't been to prison yet.
Well, he still committed some awful shit, but he did eventually go to prison. It's true.
Yeah,
we're gonna and we'll just sort of briefly talk about that. Okay, so Jim Baker, before he was just Jim Baker, he was Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. Now, Tammy Faye, unfortunately, is no longer with us. She passed away sometime around, what was it? I think it was like 2006, 2007. So, back in the 80s, the televangelist circuit basically exploded. It had basically been building up in the mid to late 70s and basically was sort of spun off of something that used to be very common down here in the South and out in the heartland. You may have heard of it, called a tent revival. Who here has ever heard of a tent revival?
Heard of it. Never understood the concept, though.
Oh, shit. I wish I could get $10 for every one that I attended.
Yeah, welcome to my life. A tent revival is basically a carnival sideshow, but it's given a religious veneer. It's basically, first of all, the first thing you need to know about tent revivals is that it's a grift.
Yep.
Doesn't it's all matter. A grift. I mean, it's all a grift, but tent revivals especially show. So, like, that is how it's specifically built. That is how it works. It doesn't matter how earnest the fucking figure up there on, you know, behind the podium is. It's a grift. It's specifically meant to milk as much money out of the people attending it as they possibly can. It's how they keep the operation running. And tent revivals are a thing that have been happening in the United States since the 1800s. But they really took off around the time of World War I. And these days, they basically have more or less disappeared. I mean,
kind of
obviously,
mega churches.
Yeah, they kind of navigated over to mega churches.
They went to the air conditioning.
Yeah.
I can understand.
Yeah, especially down here south. I mean, yeah. You know, there's a reason why most tent revival meetings happen at night.
Yep.
That's
the most relatable part of the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's actually relatively cool and you don't have to deal about fucking mosquitoes and shit. Depending on which part of the South you're in, that is. Yeah. But, one of the guys, one of the young gentlemen who got sort of swept under this was a guy named Jim Baker. Jim Baker was basically let me put it this way. He was an abused child. His mother once famously told him that she was just $50 short of aborting him.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, his dad was a drunkard who beat the ever-loving crap out of him. He was molested by one of his neighbors. And that's going to tie into something that happens a little later. But he, he decided he wanted to try and make it as an actor. And he was – apparently he wasn't bad either. He was actually, like, getting ready to go out to California to make it big until he, as he tells it, he attended a tent revival meeting and he's like, in like his memoirs, he said he would basically say shit like, and that's when I heard the voice of God. In reality, it was probably him like, oh fuck. Yeah. I could make a shit ton of money this way.
He got the calling.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. And, if there is one feather in Jim Baker's cap that you could put in, it's this. Unlike a lot of the tent revivalists of his era, he was distinctly anti-racist. And I know that seems like something that you would think would just be a given in the I know, but when you consider what happened later. But considering in the time and the area he was brought up in, that was distinctly unique. Because keep in mind that tent revival meetings were also fairly common places where people you know, protested integration.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually he went on the tent revival circuit, and he ended up meeting up with a woman by the name of Tammy Faye Miller. Now, Tammy Faye kind of became like a sort of a punchline because of the just insane amount of mascara and shit she would put on her face.
Tarantula eyes.
Yeah, tarantula eyes, seriously. But she was also a singer, and not a very bad one either. And so they got married, and they decided, we're going to take our act on the road. And so they started going around, and they made good money, and eventually they decided to branch out into some entrepreneurship. They founded a church, and then they decided to found a little outfit called CBN. The Christian Broadcasting Network. And they did that with the help of a pastor / businessman you also may have heard of, a little gentleman by the name of Pat Robertson.
Ugh, God, yes, him.
Yeah, if you ever got up too early in the morning and accidentally saw the 700 Club on television, you've seen Pat Robertson. He's been doing that shit since the late 70s. Which is actually when the 700 Club first started. And guess who was the first host of the 700 Club? Jim Baker. But eventually, Jim and Tammy Faye decided that, you know, they wanted to go out for greener pastures. They wanted to start their own, like, little thing. And so they went over to a rival network, which you also may have heard of, Trinity Broadcasting Network, a.k.a. TBN. Which is probably the network that is most infamous for hosting the most grifting fucking televangelist scumbags you will ever hear of. Like, all the worst ones you can think of. Like, Benny Hinn, fucking Paula Hicks, or whatever her goddamn name is. What was his name? Peter Popoff, I think was his name. The dude who claimed that he was receiving messages from God when he was actually, like, listening to a microphone that his wife was speaking into in his ear. All those guys basically got their start on that one network. And they made enough money that they were actually able to found their own organization, PTL Ministries. And they started their own little TV show, which was called, if I remember correctly, I'm trying to remember what it was called. It was called it was like an hour long show. It was called the PTL Club. That's what it was called. And it was a show that they actually started that they actually managed to create a whole network specifically dedicated to it. And they brought individuals like Billy Graham and Oral Roberts. They had famous people like Mickey Rooney and Mr. T sign on board. Fucking Colonel Sanders, like towards the end of his life, actually showed up on that fucking show. And basically talked a hell of a lot about his bowel movements for some reason.
Well, considering, you know, what he's famous for, I can kind of see that.
And meanwhile, he's saying all this, and there's a big-ass fucking bucket of chicken, like, right there on the desk. So, you know.
Yeah, I can connect those dots.
Yeah. And then, like, what some people consider to be, like, the absolute most grandiose fucking thing they decided to do, they expanded their ministry to a theme park called Heritage USA. In Fort Mill, South Carolina. It was a water park, a theme park, a residential complex. It actually did really well. During the years it was operating, it was the third most popular theme park in the United States.
Oh, my God.
The only two. Can you take a wild guess what the other two were?
Walt
Disney World and Disneyland.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It was that popular. But it ended up having to close in 1989 for a couple of reasons. One of the big ones was Jim Baker was writing a shit ton of bad checks. and there was like a bunch of like, you know, he was using two sets of books. Let's put it that way.
Were they cooked books?
Oh, they were cooked. Eventually. Oh, that shit was deep fucking fried.
That's why they called in the colonel.
Yeah. And of course, both Jim and Tammy Faye themselves were fucking selling, buying shit like crazy. You know, cars, swimming pools. I'm pretty sure there was some cocaine involved at some point. I know for a fact Tammy Faye got hooked on like fucking like serious painkiller shit too. And it was kind of an open secret at this point that Jim was probably cheating on Tammy Faye.
Yeah.
But it all came to a head in he had already been getting investigated by 1980 because, you know, the FCC were he had allegedly misused some funds that they had raised on the air for like personal shit. And for the record, Tammy Faye was also part of some of this shit too, so she's not entirely innocent of it. But there is a big difference that I'll tell you about the end between her and Jim, and you'll find, and I'll tell you in just a second. But basically, what finally sort of brought this whole house of cards tumbling down was the discovery of a mysterious payoff of about $279,000. And the reason we know of this is thanks to the Charlotte Observer, which was the newspaper of that part of the area, because they were located in Charlotte, North Carolina. It had turned out that sometime in the early 80s, a young woman by the name of Jessica Hahn, who was a very devout Christian who was working as a intern, working on an internship to eventually having steady employment for PTL. And Baker and one of his co-hosts, a guy named John Wesley Fletcher, drugged her and then took turns raping her. Once this was discovered, the Charlotte Observer, led by Charles Shepard, began investigating PTL's finances, published a series of articles that would actually get them a Pulitzer, by the way. And so, as you can imagine, this was not good. Jim Baker basically had to resign from PTL. To this day, he still denies that he actually raped her. He claims it was completely consensual. He supposedly also had same-sex relations, according to John Wesley Fletcher and Jay Badcock, who was the PTL director. I just realized what that last name is. God damn it. it's actually pronounced Babcock, but yeah. Yep. He denied both of these under oath. And keep in mind, this is John Wesley Fletcher, the other guy who did the raping, so it's possible he was trying to throw Baker under the bus. Then another televangelist named John Ankerberg went on Larry King Live, and he made several more allegations against Baker. What ended up happening was the financials of PTL basically cratered, and so it was looking for a buyer. And keep in mind during this time that there was a fuck ton of financial fraud that was happening behind the scenes. That payoff for Jessica Hahn, that was just tip of the iceberg. Eventually what would happen is that in 1988, Baker would be indicted on 8 counts of mail fraud, 15 counts of wire fraud, and 1 count of conspiracy. So it then turned out that somebody had to come in and pick up the pieces for PTL, because, you know, still company running, and, you know, you want to keep the funds flowing. You know who it was who ended up taking over PTL? Jerry fucking Falwell.
Oh.
God damn him.
Yep. And basically, he bought, took over PTL under the, from Baker at least, under the idea that this was temporary to lead the ministry until the scandal died down, and then Baker would come back and get the, you know, get the reins back again. Yeah, that didn't happen. Falwell actually barred him from returning on it on in 1987.
Shocking.
Eventually, the donations cratered. Falwell had to raise $20 million to keep the PTL solvent. He actually, one of the things he did for charity was, he took a little trip on a water slide. Yeah, see, there's this famous photograph here of Jerry Falwell going down the water slide at Heritage USA in a cheap two-piece suit. There he is.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And, of course, Jerry Falwell then did one of the things he did best, which is basically collapse the company and seize all of its assets for himself. The thing is, though, at this point, the 80s era of televangelism was kind of coming to its end because Jim Baker may have been the big one of that era, but he wasn't the only one who ended up, gaining infamy for sexual misconduct. Because, you see, part of the reason Jerry Falwell was ready so quickly to buy up PTL was because he was afraid one of his rivals, you may have heard of him, a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Swaggart. He was apparently planning to come in and buy PTL himself, and so Jerry Falwell decided to sweep in and get it before he could. About a couple months to a year after the story with Jim Baker broke, Jimmy Swaggart would go on public television and cry his wussy ass off because he got caught with a hooker.
Mm-hmm. Boy, there's common threads here.
Yeah, they're all degenerates, every goddamn one of them. Pretty much. Eventually Jim Baker would be indicted. He would go to prison for a couple years. He would eventually come back around, I think it's around 2003. And he would start a new show called The Jim Baker Show at a Studio City Cafe in Missouri. And eventually, that would eventually go into around 2013, when he started talking, where he, you know, who is now very much bald and has the white beard and goatee that everybody knows him for now, where he has said that he turned back on, because before he went to prison, he basically made a public denouncement of prosperity gospel, which that's basically what most of these televangelists work on. You know, he said, no, actually prosperity gospel is a good thing. And, so by 2013, he started, making little prophecy bullshits on, his new public ass STD show, which then started going on the internet, which meant that he now had a whole new audience. And it was also around that era, and keep in mind, this was about a year after a certain someone was reelected president, and so the entire Christian right was losing its goddamn mind. He started claiming that hurricanes were to be blamed on President Obama. He's claimed that if Donald Trump is impeached, Christians would begin a second civil war. But probably the one thing he's most infamous about now is the fact that he now hawks emergency food preparations. Let's call it that. What it's really are fucking slop buckets.
Yeah.
Nasty-ass slop buckets. That would probably actually kill you before the apocalypse did, because fucking hell, that shit is very unhealthy. Like, it is. It is loaded with fucking sodium and calories and shit. More, like, at least like six times the recommended intake from the FDA.
God
yeah.
Damn.
So yeah, that's Jim Baker. And of course, now he's also hawking, you know, silver, colloidal silver, which we've talked about colloidal silver before on this show before, haven't we?
Yeah.
About what that shit does to you. Because, you have a little bit of history of that shit, Teresa, don't you? Or at least someone in your family.
I never used it, but yeah, I know people who have, and you can see it. They look like ash, and sometimes they turn blue. It's for real.
Yeah, they do turn that, and she's not lying. They literally turn blue. Like, they turn so blue that...
Smurf.
Yeah, you're actually worried. If you saw them, like, sleeping, you would think they were dead.
Yeah. But in the low doses, little micro-dosing that they do on it, oh my god. They look ashy, they look sick, they look unhealthy.
You can actually start seeing it in their eyes, too. Yeah. Like, it... Yeah.
It's very off-putting.
Yeah. Now, in reality, it doesn't act... The worst that that stuff actually does to you is maybe make you itch a little bit, and, of course, it does shit with your skin.
Mm-hmm.
But it has no health benefits whatsoever.
Nah.
It's a quack hillbilly cure that should have gone out the window decades ago.
Yeah. Along with so many others.
Yeah. And that has been Jim Baker, and that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. The more things change, the more I want the world to burn.
Time machine.
All right, anyway, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And unfortunately, we have to start with our asshole of the week, and our asshole souls of the week are these two jerk bags in my state who a couple of months ago found some guy, black guy, out who was jogging, thought he was suspicious, got out of their car and shot him with a shotgun.
Yep.
It was a lynching. Pure and simple.
Please tell me he died instantly.
God, I hope so.
Right. That's horrible.
Yeah. And like I said, remember I told you, this happened a couple months ago. Do you want to know why we're hearing about it now?
Because somebody besides the police just now found the video and looked at it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Because, basically, okay, I can't remember what city this is in. This is in, like I said, yeah, it's in Georgia. It's Brunswick, so it's in Glynn County. Which basically, this asshole named Gregory McMichael and his son Travis McMichael, yes, we are fucking naming these pricks, were basically indicted this week. They were actually arrested, I think, today, wasn't it?
Yesterday, I think.
It was today, or either today or late yesterday. But basically, somebody who wasn't there actually took film of it while it was happening, and they released it online. And keep in mind, the reason we're only talking about this now and why this is a big deal, first of all, this is Georgia, and... we have a unfortunate history with shit like this happening. But it's also because apparently it's come out that the DA and the local law enforcement apparatus in Brunswick, or at least that part of Brunswick, in Glynn County, actually knew about this case, and apparently they refused to press charges. Because these guys claimed it was self-defense, and
that was enough for them.
Yeah. Then the video came out, and it's very clear this is not fucking self-defense. If anybody's defending themselves, it's Mr. Ahmed Arbery, who I have watched the video, and you can very clearly see him trying to get the gun away from himself, which is a perfectly rational thing to do. Especially if you see a potbelly Hicks like this showing up with a shotgun pointed at your head and you're like, fuck. Yeah, it's awful. And, it's you know, it's been a while since we've had another one of these incidences go public like this, or make headlines this way. And man, it's because you watch the video, it is very fucking clear what is happening here. They claimed that the reason they were doing it was because they said he was found. He was apparently in an area that he supposedly shouldn't have been in. Like there was a house that was under construction. And I guess he had gone in. Maybe he was just curious or something. They saw him. And then I think it was like later on, because this all this didn't happen in the same day. This was like what the incident that you see in the video was like a day or so after that. And these guys fucking found him and chased him down.
Yeah.
And fucking murdered him in cold blood out in middle of daylight.
And, you know, I just want to point out that it sounds weird to a lot of people that somebody just went in and roamed around a house that was being built. People in the South do that a lot.
Yeah, it's
thing. Yeah, it's okay thing to do. It's acceptable there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you're white.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah, even fucking Governor Kemp is like, yeah, people deserve answers for this bullshit. Of course, this is also Brian Kemp we're talking about, so, you know.
Take that with a grain of salt.
Take it with like a whole bucket of salt. Yeah, these guys are arrested. They are probably going to be indicted on charges of first degree murder, if not manslaughter at the very least. Because as far as I know, none of the self-defense laws apply here. You know, they weren't in, you know, this didn't happen in these dudes' home. You know, it didn't happen on their property. It, you know, Mr. Arbery himself was unarmed. So there was really no way for him to fight back against a pump action shotgun.
No.
So, yeah, I would like to say this is a pretty open and shut case, but we also said that about shit like Tamir Rice. And, yeah. Let's just say I have
doubts. We'll be following the story.
We will be following it. We sure as shit in Georgia are going to be following it.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if these guys also end up getting charged with a hate crime as well.
Yeah.
It's pretty yeah, because it's pretty obvious there's some profiling going on here too. But yeah. But to lighten the news up a bit, we've got a hero of the week, and holy shit, this is one hell of a hero, too. There is a woman who lives in, let's see, where does she live? Her name's Angelina Friedman.
Mohegan Lake, New York.
Yeah, lives in the nursing home there. She's 101 years old, and she is a survivor of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, and now she's also survived COVID-19.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she didn't have the 1918 flu. She was born on the ship that was coming from Italy to New York.
Yeah, which makes her – that does, however, make her very at risk, though.
Very.
So yeah. She just kind of lucked out.
Yeah.
It's called breast milk. Immunities. Yeah.
Yeah. But did she actually catch COVID-19, though?
I believe so.
Wow. And at her age, too. God damn, she must be Superwoman.
Yep.
Okay, it doesn't look like she did. She's just, you know, surviving the pandemic itself.
Oh,
but it's been around for both.
He survived both of these. That's pretty extraordinary.
Yep.
Yeah, at her age, she'd be like the first to go.
Yeah.
And she has a pretty crazy life story because her mother died giving birth.
Not sure to her, that.
But she has I think there's 11 kids in her family, which is a sign of the day. Where they just kept going. Her two sisters helped her survive until they could reunite with her father in New York, where they lived in Brooklyn. She was born on a ship that transporting immigrants from Italy to New York City in the midst of the 1918 pandemic. It's not believed that the baby contracted a disease. She did have it. She had gone out to the hospital for procedure, and when she returned, she had tested positive.
Wow.
So your mother isolated in her room and ran a fever on and off for several weeks as she battled the coronavirus until April 20th when she tested negative.
Ooh, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When she got better, she was looking for yarn to crochet with.
Mm-hmm.
She's a big knitter. She makes all kinds of things and gives them away to visitors. The staff threw a big birthday party for her 101st birthday that was recently.
So yeah, that's pretty amazing. Wow.
Well, she survived both of them, so that's kind of special. It's also it's hopeful because if she can survive it, then chances are a lot of other people can too. So,
mm-hmm.
7% is still 7%, though.
Yeah. So, that's a hell of a thing. Yeah. All right. With that out of the way, beep, beep, time to move out of the way. We got backing up the dump truck, the COVID-19 dump truck again for you. We got a new load for you. First things first, there are now 3.9 million cases worldwide, about 273,000 deaths total. Yep.
There's a 7%
about
talking about.
Yeah. About 1.28 million cases in the United States alone. 77,000 have died because of it in the United States.
It's still going pretty strong.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, we are almost five times Spain's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It was number two, 222,000.
Yeah. Next up, for this story, I kind of have to put a little caveat at the end of it, but Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, had been going on this warpath, claiming that there was enormous evidence that the virus originated in a lab in China. He's actually started backpedaling from that because I guess it's just not catching on. Well, but the thing is, though, everyone in the Trump administration does this all the time. They kind of talk out of both sides of their mouths. They go in hard on something, and then like a day or so later, they'll kind of walk it back a bit. And then, if it turns out they were right, they're like, "See, right along." If it turns out they were wrong, it's like, "Hey, I also said that I thought it might be doubtful to, plausible deniability." They're fucking masters of that shit.
Or they just say they didn't mean it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was joking.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Even he knows that's a bird brain thing.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Basically just going against the general intelligence community's findings so far.
Which is like, there's no evidence that this thing was in a lab or created in any way.
Yeah. Which is weird, because that's one of the things that keeps coming up. It seems to be the most virulent of the rumors.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, part of the reason is because... Yeah, it's because the way the Chinese government kind of handled it at first, by just sort of pretending it didn't exist.
Yeah.
Um, So that kind of shadiness just makes the whole thing very open for conspiracies like that.
Yeah.
But also, in other cases of trying to go hard in on something and then walking it back later, Donald Trump was actually going to shut down the COVID-19 task force this week.
Uh-huh.
And then he said, no, we're going to keep it going indefinitely. Because apparently somebody was like, yeah, this ain't going to go over well.
And
he actually listened to him.
He's suggesting that they're pivoting to focus on reopening America. Despite us not being done with this yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's really ham-boning it on making sure that this fucking – that we end up reopening the country by, what was it, like Labor Day or something? I think Memorial he originally Day. Wanted to open it up before Memorial Easter. Day, right? Yeah. He wanted to do it before Easter.
Yeah. Now he's been
moving the goalpost a little bit.
Filled up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like he knows what that looks like.
Yeah.
Right?
And furthermore, in Trump assholishness, he blocked the Center for Disease Control from releasing guidelines for reopening businesses.
Yep. I think the description was it was too prescriptive. I was just like, that sounds good. Like you want it to be pretty detailed. But no, that's it's making Trump look bad. I guess. Mm-hmm. They got a hold of it here, the PDF. It's about reopening youth programs and camps, child care programs, faith communities, mass transit, which, geez, I think that's something people are probably going to want to avoid as much as possible is
mm-hmm.
subways and buses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Restaurants, bars, schools, workplaces. Just general guidelines and all that kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And then he visited a mass factory in Arizona as a Guns N' Roses version of Live and Let Die played in the background.
Also while not wearing a mask.
Yeah, I'm pretty None sure of these people that, are
wearing masks.
That... Yeah, I actually am not entirely sure that's his doing. I think somebody at the factory was like, fuck this guy, and specifically put that on for that reason.
I think it seems like the sort of factory that would just have the rock station.
Yeah, that's true.
Just kind of coincidentally plays a Guns N' Heroes song because
Guns N' Roses, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Guns N' Roses, yeah. That would be the sort of music that they would be playing lots of.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's funny watching it and you see, you know, him just being there, you know, talking about showing these masks, like, oh, none of these people are wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
Seems ironic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we found out today that the press secretary for Vice President Pence tested positive for COVID-19. By the way, the person involved is the woman who is married to Stephen Miller.
Yeah. Katie Miller.
Katie Miller, yep.
Who married a ghoul.
Yeah.
Which I saw somebody's like, I hope they build a wall around Stephen Miller.
Yep.
Could we?
Could we please? Actually, why don't we just find a well and throw him down it?
Mm.
It's just as effective.
Yeah.
It's functionally the same thing, but with less labor involved.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, this effectively means that
a drywall though, because it wouldn't want to contaminate any water.
Yeah.
Yeah. This effectively means the West Wing potentially contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing of value was lost.
Was lost. Right. Another 3.2 million people filed for unemployment this week, officially making the unemployment rate in the United States 14.7% in April.
Yeah, the highest since the Great Depression for 1 month.
Yep.
Yeah, so let's see. We're at 20.5 million jobs lost in April, which is the worst ever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, 75% are of the job losses are considered temporary. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's quite a rise from about 4% earlier this year to 14%.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, that's no good. No good at all.
No good at all. Boy. It's if it gets any higher, you're going to start seeing blood in the streets. Mm-hmm. Just straight up. Because, you know, once it gets to around 20, that's where you're going to need to get worried and prepared, because that's rioting numbers.
Yeah. Well, at this rate,
keep in mind that this is only people who actually, and keep in mind that this is only counting the people who actually filed for unemployment. There's probably a few more out there who haven't filed.
Because they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the report notes that many people who lost jobs in April but didn't look for another one weren't even counted in the unemployment rate. They're captured in a separate index. The proportion of all working age adults who are employed, this figure is now just 51.3%, lowest proportion on record.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, so... Wonderful, just wonderbar. And for the part of the COVID-19 dump truck that has to do with stupidity of the common man, Costco decided that okay, in order to keep our employees and all the other shoppers safe, we're going to say that if you want to come into one of our stores, you should start wearing a mask when you're in our store. And because apparently in the age of COVID-19, wearing a mask is a fucking political statement now, it sparked a boycott.
Yep.
You know what? They can fucking boycott Costco, and we could all get through the lines quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people are saying. It's like, it's weird to boycott a warehouse store that you have to subscribe to a membership to go shopping. Like, you have to actively pay for the privilege of work of shopping there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, what, you're just going to give them the money and then not go anymore? You let them win. Because I think generally with that stuff, they don't make much of a profit off the individual items. It's usually like the membership is the big thing, and maybe like food stuff they sell, like cafe or whatever. Like, it's a lot of that kind of stuff that's their profit makers. But yeah, they collected a bunch of tweets here from people on both sides. Let's see. You have hit a new low. You are an American corporation with an obligation to support our American values. Dictating face masks for your workers is one thing, but forcing this on your loyal members who paid for a membership is a complete abuse of power. Hashtag boycott Costco. So I don't,
abuse
I don't know
power.
What American values is that you can... that you never wear a mask in pandemics.
I guess they're against Halloween.
I don't know, but let's see. Somebody else here. Seriously considering canceling my Costco membership over this face mask requirement to shop in their stores. No thanks. I'm being told by friends that masks are required at Costco now for everyone. Guess I made my last trip there last week. Because let me know when the face mask brigade is over. Let's see. There's another one here. And here we go. I guess I won't be shopping at Costco. It is my choice to wear or not wear a face mask. You restrict my freedom. I stay out of your store. Deuces. It's like, I mean, yeah, you can have that choice. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you're allowed to go anywhere you want with it. Let's see. Many people are on the other side. Let's see. Left my ass off at all the Costco shoppers boycotting because they're being asked to wear a mask. Thanks for shortening the lines.
Yeah,
wear a mask 40 plus hours a week to provide you with health care. Why the fuck can't you just suck it up and wear one to Costco? Let's see. I think a lot of people don't understand what rights are. No, walking around Costco without a mask on is not a right. It's a privately owned company. If you don't follow the rules, they have the right to not let you in. Get it? Which is exactly. They're not the government's.
Yeah.
Not yet. Glad to hear Costco following CDC recommendations. Wear a mask, please. Wear a mask for you and to protect my father who's battling cancer. Please wear a mask for those you love. Let's see. Yep, there's somebody on Facebook posting like a doctored posting or like suggesting that Costco's Facebook account was replying to people talking shit to them, which is weird, but people thought it was real, and I believe the Snopes coverage of it is figured out it was fake. So yeah, smartest people involved in all of this.
Mm-hmm. This there's just some stupid fucking people in this country, like seriously stupid. Very much in need of, you know, I would say education, but the thing is, these are the kind of people who are proud of the fact that they're stupid. It's
yeah, they're proudly ignorant.
Yeah, they see it as a virtue.
Yeah,
and like, how do you combat that shit except trying to minimize the effect they have?
You just continue.
That's why you block them from coming into the stores.
Yeah.
And positive peer pressure to reinforce that as a society, we will not accept that kind of anti-intellectualism.
Yeah.
We do not accept it. You're going to be shamed. You deserve to be shamed. You are a shame.
Yeah. And speaking of such individuals, because, you know, we've been having all of these fucking reopen bullshit rallies with a bunch of dumbasses showing up with their assault rifles and shit. One individual decided to show up in Illinois. That's right. It's your state, Teresa.
Oh, I know.
Who showed up with a sign that read, Arbeit macht frei, JB. You guys know what Arbeit macht frei is?
No.
It's the thing that's emblazoned on the gate of Auschwitz. It's German for work makes you free.
Because they were gaslighting them to thinking, oh, you work hard enough, you might survive.
And this dipshit apparently is trying to make some kind of Nazi comparison to having to stay inside for a few weeks.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, you're basically the same as the Holocaust survivors.
Yeah,
it's basically the same thing. But yeah, also conveniently addressing that to JB.
Mm-hmm.
Is also he is Jewish.
Governor. Yep.
Yeah, he so, fucking blasted back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically saying, let's see, yesterday there were quite a number of people protesting by carrying signs filled with hate. I'll defend to the death their right to be wrong, say out loud, but if you look at the facts, experts are trying to protect them. I spent decades of my life fighting against bigotry and hatred, and I've helped build IHMEC, Illinois Holocaust Museum,
mm-hmm.
By working with Holocaust survivors. The meaning of that swastika is apparently unknown to the people who are carrying it, or if it is known, it's a demonstration of the hate that is among us.
Yeah, they know.
There's another one that just had Heil JB with the swastika on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
They know. They know.
But yeah, the Auschwitz Memorial Museum spoke out against it as well, saying, Arbeit macht frei was a false, cynical illusion the SS gave to prisoners of Auschwitz. Swords became one of the icons of human hatred. It's painful to see the symbol instrumentalized and used again to spread hate. It's a symptom of moral and intellectual degeneration. Which, yep, not wrong.
Yep, anyway, it's true.
Again,
I
hate Illinois Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all hate Illinois Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best parts of the Blues Brothers.
Yep. So that's the end of COVID-19 dump truck for this week. Check back next week when we'll have a fresh load for you. Because we definitely will. Next up, outside of that, Attorney General William Barr has officially dropped the case against Michael Flynn, even though he pled guilty twice.
Yep. Just in case you need to know who Barr works for, it's not the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's Trump's secondhand man.
Yep.
That's what we need to protect the man.
Mm-hmm. Basically, what they are saying is that Flynn was essentially trapped into lying, which... So basically, they're using an accusation of entrapment here, I'm guessing, except I'm pretty sure that doesn't work if you're actually doing the illegal thing already. Because he had been working for the Turkish state in their on their behalf without registering with the government as a foreign agent. Whether or not he was entrapped into lying about that doesn't matter. He was still fucking doing it, you know?
Yeah. Like, this doesn't change.
This isn't a case of like where this isn't like a case where a law enforcement officer basically forces you to do something that is illegal and then arrest you on it. That's entrapment. If you were already doing that illegal thing in the first place and you were just quote-unquote entrapped into not – you were coerced into saying you weren't doing it, that still doesn't overturn the fact that you're fucking doing it, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit. We all know it's bullshit. And speaking of bullshit, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the hospital with an infection caused by a gallstone.
God damn it. Not even close to the right time for this.
No. Apparently she's fine, though. Yep. She is making a recovery.
And so, she's working still.
Mm-hmm.
Her hospital bed, just calling in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing now, is just doing their arguments over phone.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just cross your fingers. Mm-hmm. What else to say? Next up, Alex Jones. He apparently went on this weird unhinged rant where he was like, me and my family are not going to starve. If shit goes down, I am going to eat my neighbors.
Yeah. Let's see.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
No.
Who did I talk to about this? This is just the craziest shit. Like, he's just going to start carving up his fucking neighbors and only feeding his daughters. What about his son?
Yeah.
His son can go screw himself.
Yeah. He was saying some wild shit about this. Let me see if I can find the whole thing he was saying.
It's unhinged.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And the thing of it is, like, none of us are the least bit surprised by any of it.
Okay, here it is. He said, I'm starting to think about...
Yeah, go ahead. I'll say it later. Saying, go ahead.
I'm starting to think about having to eat my neighbors. You think I like sizing up my neighbor, how I'm going to haul him up by chain and chop his ass up? I'll do it. But I'm literally looking at my neighbors now and going, I'm ready to hang him up and gut him and skin him and chop him up. You know what? I'm ready. My daughters aren't going to starve to death. I'll eat my neighbors. When my babies come into the equation, I will cook your ass up so fast and I'll tell them, oh, I killed a cow out back, baby. Here it is, because my babies ain't going to die for your crap, your failure. I will eat your leftist ass like corn on the cob. I'm ready. I'll barbecue your ass flat. I will eat you. I will drink your blood. You understand that? I'll hang your ass up and cut you into cutlets like a filet mignon. Grill your ass before I watch my daughter starve to death. Let me tell you something right now. I swear to God, if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to get my hands around your throat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody alerted the local authorities?
I'm pretty right fucking sure.
Because
ex-wife has. Because
mm-hmm.
So they went through the custody trial for that. I think they have shared custody.
Mm-hmm.
Also convenient with that whole rant, he also has a son.
Hmm.
He doesn't mention yeah. him at all.
Which is like, dude, what the fuck is going on between you and your son?
And,
that you decided to leave him out of the equation.
Maybe his son's the first one to go.
Or maybe in his mind, he considers since he's his son, he's strong enough to do what he needs to do without his help.
They're going to be like, no.
I mean, what the fuck knows what's going on in that man's head?
Yeah.
They're just going to go around chasing the neighbors and killing them.
This guy is a waste of space.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's why he's basically got no platform, really.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, pretty much. By the way, speaking of waste of space, the campaign manager for Trump's 2020 campaign, he has compared their upcoming plans to the Death Star, which, first of all, sick reference, brah. Second of all, not a good idea to compare your campaign to the part of Star Wars that was specifically based on the Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They set themselves up for an easy tweet by the Biden campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Of Luke Skywalker blowing it up.
I mean, don't get in on May the 4th be with you if you don't fucking get the lore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which he followed up.
The Empire are the bad guys, right?
Yeah. And they followed up basically saying, like, well, it was the media that named it this. Like,
no,
actually, it was.
No, dude.
Your own people.
Damn tweet.
Yeah, we got the tweet, dude. Mm.
But he said, in a few days, we start pressing fire for the first time for this digital marketing campaign they have going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Good thing to say in the middle of a pandemic where we lost 77,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. All right. Next up. In the department of murder hornets are now a thing in the United States, and that's adding another risk to America's honeybee population. That is in fact what they are called.
That's right now. They are called Vespa mandarinia.
Mm-hmm.
They're an Asian giant hornets, about 2 inches long.
Yeah, they're basically a about the width. They are as long as your hand is wide. And they also have one of the most painful stings known to man.
Yeah, and they in Japan killed about 50 people a year. But yeah, they are they arrived in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, about 1.5 to 2 inches long. Large yellow-orange heads, prominent eyes, black and yellow-striped abdomen. Yeah, they made their way over here about December with 4 sightings. Let's see. He's also spotted in British Columbia. I just saw an interesting story about a couple that ran, or that were beekeepers, had some of theirs get killed by these things and tracked it back to its nest and killed the nest, which is kind of
you know
crazy.
How long their stinger is at full like fully unsheathed, it's about the length of your fingernail. From like tip to cuticle.
That's so, gonna hit bone.
Yeah, that's gonna be like yeah, don't want that.
What's that dude's name? Who like went on YouTube and like did a whole series of him getting stung by various insects.
Idiot.
I think his name's Coyote Peterson.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Something.
Yeah. The murder hornet ended up being the number 2 on the pain index.
And
the only one that topped it was the bird
forming on his arm.
Yeah. It was like he just injected fucking steroids. And he only stung himself on, like, what was it, like, his forearm? And it ended up, like, swelling up his entire arm.
Yeah.
The only thing that was more painful for him was the bullet ant.
Yeah, so these things attack the beehives, decapitating and killing the adults, eating the larva and pupa.
Yep.
Just a few of the hornets completely destroy a hive in a matter of hours.
Yes.
They typically do not go after humans, but if they do, not even beekeeping suits can protect against the stingers.
Oh, yeah, cause oh god damn it.
Bigger. They can punch through.
Yeah, it's painful, packed with neurotoxins. Even if someone is not allergic to the hornet, multiple stings have the potential to kill.
Yep.
Yeah, let's see. Beekeeper and entomologist in Nanaimo, British Columbia, said the day after he got stung, his legs ached like he had the flu, and this thing was the most painful sting he ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
That's for a beekeeper.
Mm.
So you see something that looks like a hornet that's way bigger than normal, just go in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Yeah, just nope your way out of there. Just at a nice,
unless you have
a
flamethrower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't make sudden movements because that will get them. That will provoke them. So don't do that.
Yeah.
But anyways.
But fortunately, like it said, it usually doesn't attack humans.
No.
Usually.
Yeah. Usually,
is the key word
there.
Feel
threatened,
which
might.
Means that it has happened. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that there are, like, I know in Japan, apparently, like, beekeepers, they have, like, a whole, like, a bunch, like, have, like, a bunch of, like, nets and stuff they use to protect their stock from these guys, so.
They'll probably end up having to use something similar here.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, I am curious whether or not we're actually going to see these guys, like, extend out of Washington and make their way to the rest of the country, or if they're going to actually stick in one area.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, climate change. Just hit Washington State for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just burn them to death.
Make sure to, you know, just shoot to kill. That's what we're asking. speaking of things from the nope department of fucking nope. In South Carolina, a woman was killed by an alligator. And I know you're thinking, like, oh, God, that's terrifying. Wait a moment. It happened in a gated community, and she was doing the nails for a homeowner that was nearby.
You gotta
and
read this
she just,
first line, Brandon.
Oh,
this
yeah.
Whole line you need
you
to
gotta.
Read.
Yeah. Get ready for this. I'll read it.
Okay. All right.
The woman intact and killed by an alligator in a gated community along the South Carolina coast was visiting the homeowner to do her nails and was trying to touch the animal when it grabbed her, authorities said.
Oh, jeez.
After briefly getting away from the alligator Friday, the woman stood in waist-deep water in the Kiowa Island pond and said, I guess I won't do this again, but the alligator grabbed her in its jaws again and took her under, according to a supplemental police report. Released Tuesday.
Yeah, this is one of the best articles I've read in a while, so
yeah.
Just continue, Brandon. We're going to read the whole thing here.
Cynthia Covert, 58, died of drowning before Charleston County deputies and firefighters were able to shoot and kill the alligator and use poles to get her out of the pond, authorities said. Covert came to Kiowa Island, a gated community southeast Charleston, to give the homeowner a manicure Friday, according to the police report. The woman told deputies East Covert typically was professional in her salon, but was relaxed and excited at the home, talking about her boyfriend's visit from Tennessee and brought a glass of wine with her. Covert saw the alligator while working on the woman's porch, and when Covert finished, she started taking pictures of the alligator, the woman told deputies. The woman and her husband started screaming for Covert to get away from the alligator because they saw it grab a deer a few days earlier, her deputies said. Covert said, quote, I don't look like a deer, and reached to touch the alligator when the animal attacked, according to the report.
I don't look like a deer. That's the most cocky thing she could have said.
The husband and a neighbor grabbed a rope and threw it to Covert, where she surfaced and stood in the pond. Covert grabbed the rope and said, I guess I won't do this again, but was suddenly pulled under by the alligator, the police report said. Deputies and firefighters looked for Covert for 10 minutes before her body finally surfaced. The alligator took her back under once. When the alligator surfaced again, a deputy shot the animal in the head with a 9mm handgun, the police report said. Covert's leg was severely damaged, but an autopsy determined she had drowned, the Charleston County Coroner's Office said. Covert was the third person killed by an alligator in South Carolina in the past 4 years. A 90-year-old woman walked out of a Charleston nursing home in 2016 and was killed, while a 45-year-old woman walking her dog was fatally attacked on Hilton Head Island in August 2018. Before these attacks, South Carolina had never recorded a person killed by an alligator.
Well, yes. This one was clearly due to stupidity.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Stupid prizes.
Well, I'm not a deer, so there's no way this thing would attack me.
Yeah. I can almost like see the conversation in the alligator's head where she's saying, no, I guess I'm not going to do that again. And the alligator's like, you're damn right you're not.
The trauma of the people who told her, you know, who were trying to help her, that I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Survivor's guilt is a thing, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a woman just died in, you know, like on their property. Okay, maybe even if she was an idiot, she's still. It's not something that they're going to take lightly.
Okay. All right. And now we're getting into the entertainment portion of the show. First story first, because, well, we're all anime files here. And, it's been released. It's been told that Rumiko Takahashi, her current project, is an anime project that is a sequel to Inuyasha called Hanyo no Yashahime.
More, please.
Yeah, it's apparently plot wise, it focuses on the descendants of I guess Inuyasha and his brother. What's his name? Shomaru.
It's a Shomaru.
Yeah. And Pat, you got something you want to say?
Well, there's in the fandom, there's long been some speculation about Sesshomaru and any particular, pairings that he might engage in. And
adoption, I'm sure, was around in feudal Japan.
We've seen the key art here. This is not adoption that's going on here.
Nope.
And
it's the character designs from Takahashi Sensei herself.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and there seems to be a good deal of wife husbandry going on here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You thinking that they basically ran a train on Kagome at some point? Like, is that the...
Well, no. The implication in the fandom is that after enough time had passed, he hooked up with Rin.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see that.
No. No. No, because then we're going to get into this whole little thing about... Final Fantasy and DDLG, and we don't need DDLG and Inuyasha as well, but there it is.
No. Yeah. I mean, if I remember correctly, like, both of them, they're fairly long-lived as, like, yokai go, aren't they?
Rin isn't a yokai.
No, I mean, I know Rin, because Rin, you know, they find her as, like, a little girl. And I guess what happened is at some point, the show where when she grew up, and I guess, you know, like, you know, Yasha.
She had died, and he brought her back to life.
Yep. So, like, yeah, I'm guessing the idea is that at some point, Sesshomaru, she grew up, and Sesshomaru did what Sesshomaru likes to do, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That or somewhere along the way, he learned to... chill out about humans that are not named Rin.
Yeah.
Which I see as the less likely option.
Yeah. Who did these two bone? That's what people are asking here.
Well,
like, how the fuck did this happen?
Within Inuyasha's side, the epilogue of the original series kind of gives that one away.
Yeah. It's,
and it's not really any kind of mystery.
No. So we're wondering who it is that Sesshomaru did the dirty with. Because if you've seen the good deal, you know, if you know enough about Inuyasha, you know there's a few candidates. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, whatever the case is, Jockin better be talking endless piles of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, next up, Peacock. That's NBC Universal streaming service. It's launching July 15th with free $4.99 and $9.99 tiers.
Yeah, so they're kind of doing the Hulu thing here,
mm-hmm.
Where the free tier has a bunch of the content with ads on it. The $5 tier is the cheaper version of their premium tier with ads on it.
Mm-hmm.
They say the free one has about 7,500 hours of content. $4.99 gets you about 15,000 hours of content, and at $9.99 is the ad-free version of the $5 tier.
Mm.
And yeah, so they currently, if you have Comcast, Xfinity, maybe some other Comcast service as well, there's Xfinity, X1, and Flex customers have it now with an early preview, just because it's all the same company.
Mm.
They have, let's see, Apple products will be getting the app on July 15th, and I think the Xbox One is the other one that they have lined up right now for the app. Not sure if there's any others. They just probably be announcing them over the next few weeks or so leading up to launch. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff on it. You know, you have like a lot of the NBC stuff. You know, Parks and Rec, 30 Rock, Saturday Night Live, King of Queens, all that kind of stuff. They got a bunch of movies. They say like Jurassic Park franchise, E.T., Meet the Parents, Shrek, and a bunch of the news stuff from, you know, today, NBC Nightly News, Meet the Press, MSNBC, CNBC, NBC Sports, E! News, and Access Hollywood, as well as sports and stuff like that. Yeah, it seems like a decent enough service.
Yeah.
Especially when you can just try it out for free.
By the way, I'm looking at some of Takahashi's original art here, the character design she did for this project. And there's the girl that you can see here, like here. She is definitely at least the one that happened with Inuyasha and Kagome, because she is very clearly carrying Tetsuya.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see who she ends up. Whoever it is, she ends up taking more after. She will be either incredibly snarky or fucking annoying as all hell. all right, next up. We already knew this was coming, but it's finally been made official. There is going to be a Tiger King scripted series made, and Nick Cage is playing Joe Exotic.
Why?
Just kind of a perfect casting.
Yeah.
So yeah, this has been in the works for a while, because this whole thing is based on a Texas Monthly article that got written up a year or so ago called Joe Exotic, A Dark Journey into the World of a Man Gone Wild. It's being made by or produced by Imagine Television Studios and CBS Television Studios. 8-episode series. No mention of platform, I think, just yet. But the showrunner for it worked on American Vandal, which is a show that is great and would be kind of a perfect vibe for this, which is kind of a mockumentary kind of thing. That's a first TV role for Cage in his career.
He's just been true. Movies,
which is kind of crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wonder how you like write anything fictional that even comes close to the reality of the thing. It's
a Herculean task. I will admit that because the reality is so insane on its own. It's like, how can you build on that?
Yeah,
yeah. So apparently the animal farm, whatever that he was running, I guess it's owned by somebody else now in Oklahoma.
Yeah, Jeff Lowe.
They opened up over there. And huge crowds.
Yep.
No social distancing as far as with the screenshots I saw that was.
Yeah.
I was like,
of course not.
I haven't watched it, but I don't think the vibe of the show is like, hey, you should go support this guy.
No, yeah, they make it pretty clear that the whole operation is shady as all hell.
Yeah.
That these people are stupid just going to see a thing because they saw it on a Netflix series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And these people are going to make tons of money off of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to die from coronavirus. So great choices made.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wonderful.
All right. Next up, Disney. No, yeah, Disney is bringing back the Wonderful World of Disney banner for movie nights on ABC.
Mm. Yeah, so some of the networks are doing this thing where they're just showing one day a week, you know, showing classic movies for people to watch, kind of have some general entertainment, because sports and some of that kind of stuff is not really much of a thing at this point.
Yeah, it's not really happening right now.
So they'll be doing this on Wednesday nights for 4 weeks beginning on May 20th, where they're going to show Moana on May 20th, Thor Dark World on May 27th, Pixar's Up on June 3rd, and Big Hero 6 on June 10th.
Mm-hmm.
All four are already on Disney Plus. CBS has been doing something similar, which started its this past Sunday with Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, not an uncommon thing.
Yeah.
Something that
some good movies.
These networks should be doing more of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the World of Disney thing is like it brings back a lot of memories for me because I used to watch a lot of those movies back when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Usually see these sort of movies just get sold deals to air on like TBS or TNT or whatever.
Yeah.
On the cable channels versus the ones that everybody gets for free.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Jerry Bruckheimer, who has announced that he's working on a National Treasure television series for Disney Plus.
Yep.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Yeah, this is a prequel series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'll be a bit younger. Not really.
Which
too
means
much
they don't have
details.
To cast Nick Cage for it.
No.
We're de-aging.
But there's also a National Treasure 3 that's also in the works. Primer confirmed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun to see how that turns out, because it's been quite a while.
Those movies are dumb as fuck, but they're also fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically kind of poor man's Indiana Jones, and yet it still works.
Yeah.
Modern day Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Next up, we got a couple trailers. We got a trailer for The King of Staten Island.
Yeah, that's the new movie featuring Pete Davidson. That's kind of about his life, loosely based on it, but directed by Judd Apatow.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it could be pretty good. This one's going straight to video on demand on June 12th.
So AMC won't play it.
No.
If they're still Universal, a company, that is.
This is still Universal. Yeah. So they're still doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still doing that.
Yep.
Then again, like I said, this is predicated on the idea that AMC is still a company by this time next year. So.
Yeah.
And finally, we got a trailer for Netflix's Space Force. And yes, it's riffing on exactly what you think it's riffing on.
And I got a couple of chuckles out of it, so it's got my interest.
Yeah.
It's nice that they're not doing The Office, but this.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is probably the most substantial thing that was ever going to come out of that anyway.
Yeah.
And it's got a pretty good cast to it as well. Mm. Especially when they show the like round table of the other military generals.
Mm-hmm.
Who run the other branches of the armed forces.
Yeah.
Just like Diedrich Bader, I forget what her name is. She was in 40-Year-Old Virgin with Steve Carell back in the day, and like a bunch of these other actors that are all pretty good. But yeah, it's also a good bit where he is sort of frustrated about this failed launch and is singing the Beach Boys, Kokomo. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, that song.
Mm-hmm. And also, he's imagining the music backing him up. And they show, like, here's him without it. It's like he just looks like a crazy person.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's out pretty soon. I'm not sure if there's a date on that. Mm. Look at the... Oh, it's not what that is. I was trying to look up for a date, but oh well. It's out sometime.
Yeah,
sometime. In the next couple months.
I think it was supposed to be the end of May, so...
Yeah, pretty sure that's the case. All right, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
May 29th.
Yep.
Might want to hold off on that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Changes.
Yeah. Yeah, you might want to hold off on that unless something changes until that point. But anyway, yeah, like I said, we've got ourselves a show, folks. So if you would like to write in to us, got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the show, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at places like Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not there, you know, just wait a few minutes. I mean, what the fuck else are you going to do? Go outside? There's murder hornets out there, damn it. But, yeah, so with that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe Malfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sims, and Chris Elogi. Good night.